This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. It's now 7:07 a.m. Wednesday, April the 7th. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be talking about plastic waste imports with Dr. Agamuthu Pariyathambi, a professor from Sunway University. But before that, Noel, what are the markets looking like?
Oh, not great at all. it's an understatement, right? U.S. markets down 0.3%, S&P 500 down 1.4%, NASDAQ down marginally 0.05%. Asian markets as well, mostly down. Nikkei 225 down 1.3%. Shanghai down marginally. Singapore's STI also down marginally. FBM KLCI down 0.3%. The Hang Seng, however, was up 2%.
The only green spot that we're seeing right now. And now for more on international markets, we speak with Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Jeff, always good to have you back on the show. Now, US equities had the slowest day yesterday after recently hitting record highs as investors wait for the start of corporate earnings again. But the trillion-dollar question is, does the rally still have legs?
In a nutshell, yes. I believe that asset price inflation will continue right through 2021. I'm sorry. And the reason for that is I'm losing track of the years now working from home. Central banks around the world are still keeping interest rates at zero, flooding the world with liquidity. That liquidity has to go somewhere in a 0% world, and a lot of that money will be heading to stock markets. So just on that basis alone, I feel that stocks still have plenty of upside. But also, we're going to see the global recovery accelerating in the second half of 2021 as well, and that will also boost equities. So I'm quite confident that we're going to see markets finish the year higher than they did even in 2020.
Well, Tesla's stock rallied this week after strong delivery numbers. What other US companies should investors track as indicators of economic recovery?
Yeah, Tesla itself, when you look at the numbers, though, it is still, compared to the automotive giants, it's still, their deliveries are still minuscule. Their stocks are richly priced. But you could also say that about just about any US stocks at the moment. So I think if you're looking for that sort of strategy, it's really consumer discretionary, is because 80% of America's GDP is generated by internal demand. So consumer discretionary is probably the leading indicator there. And I would say sectors such as mall REITs, and that's definitely been a bombed out sector in the US. And then discretionary such as Carnival Cruise Lines, industrial bellwethers such as Caterpillar, although it is actually at record highs anyway. And then one of my favorites is always Harley Davidson. When people like me are going out to have midlife crises, Sons of Anarchy, sort of recapture their youths and buying very expensive Harley Davidsons, that's usually a good sign that the economy is recovering.
Now, speaking of Harley Davidsons, let's talk a little bit about oil then. Was it the right move by OPEC Plus to increase oil production quotas from May onwards, Jeff? Thoughts?
It was a punchy call, to be honest. They're really taking a big punt here that Europe's going to get COVID-19. Well, they're going to make progress on COVID-19. In the next month or so, and things will start improving there. The US is obviously a known, so to speak. I think India muddies the waters here because India is the world's third largest importer of oil, and they're already making noises about paying too high prices. And they've been going on a buyer's strike with Saudi Arabia. So if India's situation deteriorates regarding the pandemic in the next month, I think that OPEC Plus may have to revisit that. But it's a little too soon to say. But I will say it was a very punchy call. And it's not surprising that oil prices have fallen after it's occurred.
So oil has generally been around the $62, $63, $64 mark recently. Do you see it deviating from that, the Brent deviating from that in the next few weeks?
I struggle to see Brent crude getting above 65, to be honest, unless India and Europe start suddenly making rapid progress on their COVID-19 situations. I think it's going to settle here. We can also see the backwardation in the futures market, and I won't bore everybody with the details of that, but when the futures are structured like that, that means that there's a shortage of oil. for immediate delivery. That's all disappeared, which indicates to me that there is plenty of supplies available in the world right now. So I think actually we're going to have a very noisy trading range between 60 and 65 for Brent crude over the next month, with the bias towards the downside as the most risky side for a large directional move at the moment.
Well, speaking about noise, we are watching reports of rising geopolitical tensions between Russia and Ukraine. Is that something investors and oil traders need to pay attention to?
They certainly weren't overnight, because European stocks had a very good session and closed at record highs, the DAX and the... And so I got that one completely wrong. But I think here, this is an evolving situation. And what I would suggest is that investors need to be prepared to move very quickly if that situation changes. So if Russia and Belarus suddenly start driving tanks over into the Ukraine, then investors need to be prepared to move very quickly to reflect that in their European portfolios.
Would that be a signal to then go to gold, Jeff, or is it more nuanced than that?
Well, you'd probably buy dollars and you'd buy gold. So that's one of the first lessons I learned decades ago as a young trader in New Zealand was my old boss always said, always buy dollars in a crisis. So I would say buying dollars and buying gold.
And we're also keeping an eye on RBA rates. The RBA, they kept rates on hold at record lows, but say it is watching rising house prices. Are there increasing signs of inflationary concerns in the Australian economy?
It's not so much inflation, it's distortions in the property market, because with interest rates at record lows and very high home ownership, and Australians are like New Zealanders, they buy houses as savings for their retirement. And we've seen New Zealand bring in these macroprudential rules to try and limit the price increases in the property market. They came out last week and the Kiwi reacted quite negatively to it. So I'm sure that the RBA, because it is a very similar market, although it's larger, is monitoring those effects in the New Zealand market. And they are probably concerned that prices have been driven to ridiculous levels because of their low interest rate policy. So I think what they might do is intervene and bring in some similar sorts of rules into the Australian property market.
The latest news is that there will be no quarantine travel between Australia and New Zealand from 19 April. What's the impact on both economies?
Oh, well, my mum was very excited. She can go and visit her grandchildren. Yeah, so look, I think it's a big positive for both economies, particularly from the tourism side. New Zealand's tourism industry's suffered because we just don't have that critical mass of a domestic market. Obviously, New Zealanders, there's a lot of New Zealanders living in Australia and they work there and they have family there as well. So it's a positive economic development for both economies, but I think particularly for the New Zealand side of that equation.
Jeff, thanks so much for your time this morning. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Awanda. And Noel, you know, that note on Australia, New Zealand and families going across and a lot of travel between those two nations, that's very similar to the situation that we often see between Singapore and Malaysia, right? End of the day, there used to be a lot of daily commutes between here. I know I have family in Singapore that's stuck there. I'm sure a lot of you have as well. So hopefully we find a way to build a bubble here and get things moving a little bit more.
Yeah, I guess it all depends on our vaccination rollout program. I think in Singapore, it's going quite well. Hopefully, Malaysia will speed up.
Yeah, but let's take a quick look at some corporate news. It looks like Credit Suisse has emerged as the biggest loser in the Archegos scandal with that fiasco of a write-down here. $4.7 billion US dollars, Noel. Not a number to be scoffed at by any means. This number will force it to cut its dividend, oh, boo-hoo, and suspend share buybacks, the least they should be doing, really. The company's investment bank head, Brian Chin, and Chief Risk Officer, Lara Werner, were amongst more than half a dozen executives replaced over the worst trading debacle in over a decade.
Right, yeah. So, and I think their investment bankers will also have to take less bonus. Ah, poor thing. anyway, Credit Suisse has now offloaded the bulk of its Archegos exposure with a $2.3 billion sale this week. But the impact of the latest sale could affect second quarter results after the scandal hits, I think, cost a $966 million pre-tax losses in the first quarter for Credit Suisse.
Yeah, this debacle follows. Following this debacle, questions have also been raised over CEO Thomas Goldstein's handling of risk, the firm's risk, just weeks after the lender was caught up in the Greens Hill Capital collapse. Very quick news here. Sources have told Bloomberg that Clubhouse is in talks to raise funding from investors in a round valuing the business at $4 billion. Right now, on that note, we're going into a few messages. When we come back, a look at plastic waste imports. Keep you here to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.